What is happening? Welcome to another Plus Pitch podcast, morning pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 16th. Happy Friday, everybody. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. We have Chris Paddock being the roundup lead yesterday, Toys in the Paddock. And if you don't know Aerosmith, it's actually kind of funny. We've had two Aerosmith graphics and SP roundup leads. The other one was Paddock in the Saddle again. Both times Chris Paddock for two different puns and also Aerosmith. I don't know. It's a fun one. And why did I lead with Chris Paddock? Well, seven innings of zero runs, three hits, one walk, and three strikeouts against the Twins. Got a win outside of the first game of the year, which was nine earned runs against the White Sox. And I was just like, well, this guy is not here. We cannot trust this. He's been amazing since. Entering this game, it was a 2.67 ERA and a 1.13 whip. And now, obviously, that improved. Can we trust Paddock? Is this just a Vargas rule? What's going on? I watched this. The four-seamer earned a lot of outs. The splitter got some good whiffs in there, got some outs too, but really this was four-seamer command ruining the day for the Orioles. Against lefties, it was a lot better. A lot of four-seamers positioned well to get those outs. And then against righties, honestly, there was nothing except four-seamers in there, and I think he got pretty lucky with those. The problem I have with Paddock is his reliance on Koufax, even though he actually did get weak contact. Maybe it was just the Orioles being bad here. But yeah, this was obviously a ton of outs in play to go seven innings of shutout ball. I mean, you have three hits. So that's 18 outs, not by way of the K. With three strikeouts and 21 outs. Sub 10% swing strike rate here and a 24% CSW for the year. 13 whiffs in this one, as he did get some on both the four-seamer well spotted. He actually had an 0-2 pitch that hit, I believe it was Adley Rutschman, which I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, all right, buddy. I tried to go up and in with that, and I kind of showcased it like, yeah, that's not always that put away pitch. But it's a 17% strikeout rate for Chris Paddock this year. And what we generally see is when we have a pitcher who is a ratio darling with a bad strikeout rate, A, you're a Toby at best, but B, it's generally because you have a really good defense. And I am not quite believing in that one with the Twins. I could be underrating them a little. It's possible. But you don't see a third pitch from Chris Paddock. And I don't really want to believe that Chris Paddock is going to do this for a while. If you want to do the Vargas rule because he gets the raise and then goes into Seattle for at T, fine. But I don't love the fact that against righties, his slider and his curve are just not very good. And even in this one, the split change, whatever you want to call it, wasn't there and reliant on four seamers down the middle. While the four seamer I do get as a good foundation, he just needs something else to really make this more believable for the full year. But I'm happy he has a good run right now. I mean, I do very much believe that four seamer command to lefties is excellent. And that split change off of it is great. And when he had that troubled game against the White Sox, it was bad sliders that really burned him against right-handers. He was trying to lean into that and make that work, and it didn't. That really makes a lot of sense to me. Sadly, we just need to see that third pitch really to put this all together and make it a sustainable season. Nick Martinez did exactly what he was supposed to do against the White Sox. Seven innings of zero runs, two hits, zero walks, and three Ks. And the thing is, just as good of a start like Paddock, and I'm also like, hey, just a Toby, right? The changeup was stellar in this one. Sinkers and four-seamers got outs and strikes over the plate, and that was cool. But essentially, this was a case where Martinez just threw lots of strikes against a bad lineup, and that's what you're supposed to do against bad lineups. Just throw strikes to them. They're probably not going to beat you on it, and you should be good. Keep going against the Pirates and the Royals for Nick Martinez. AJ Smith-Shawver, I mean, it's actually pretty interesting. There are five teams that you can just take these okay pitchers and say, yeah, it's fine, just go against them. It's like Nationals, it's the White Sox, it's Rocky Road, it is the Marlins. Those are the four off the top of my head, and I probably could say the Pirates in there, that's five. You can maybe throw in the Royals-ish in there. I think there are maybe one or two other teams that I'm kind of forgetting about in the moment, but those are the main ones. And AJ Smith-Shawver, I'm not a believer, but he had a golden goal, 17 whiffs and a 36% CSW in six innings, zero runs, two hits, two walks, and six Ks against the Nationals. Yep, that's it. I don't trust this long-term at all. The four-seamer has some elements that are good. It is above average extension. It's close to 7 feet. It's not quite there, but it's close. and he can be relatively flat on that four seamer. But it's just at 93. It's not like at the 96 that I've seen in the past from AJ Smith-Shaw for a while. This splitter is just a strange butterfly splitter that's more about cutting spin than it is actually getting drop. It's really weird. Sometimes you see more vert on some of these splitters than you do some of AJ Smith-Shaw's four-seamers, which is like, oh, okay, you really don't want that. And the curveball is not really this reliable strike pitch. It's not really the thing that you want it to be the number two, so it's really turned into this splitter, and I don't think that AJ Smith-Shaw, outside of these great matchups, is a hold in your 12-teamers. He does get the Nationals a second time, so we'll do a Daft Punk and do this one more time. Jacob deGrom was against Hunter Brown, and this was such a joy of a start. I mean, I have a game, really. It was a quick one, as they both went eight innings, and Jacob deGrom just barely out-dueled Hunter Brown for a run. So eight innings, zero earned runs, five hits, one walk, and seven strikeouts for Jacob deGrom. Him against right-handers is a gorgeous time because his slider is absurd against them. And honestly, his four-seamer command is waning a little bit this year, more so than usual. He's getting more of the middle of the plate than he used to. I used to say a way better than what I have seen. But, I mean, this is just insane. He was extreme whiffs on the slider, extreme call strikes on the four-seamer. Incredible. He's so fun. He's the GOAT. He's at 97 now and just hanging out there after kind of getting upset, I think, at the early part of the season of like 96 and change. It wasn't going as well. 90% strikes on that four-seamer. 90%. He had 96 pitches in eight innings. I think this was like the first time since, I may get this wrong, but since 2021 that DeGrom has gone eight innings. I could be wrong, but yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while. For obvious reasons, but still pretty cool. And Hunter Brown, I mean, should he get aces against ace? It's a weird case because I know I'm strange. I have my own thoughts and opinions of what makes a pitcher work. And I still see what Hunter Brown brings to the table with his arsenal and say it's not quite as solid of a package to make me think that he is just a don't think about it stud. You just always pitch, right? You know, Logan Webb I was against, but then I see, hey, cool, I get it now. Your changeup is not the number two. It's actually just situational whenever you want it because you have this sweeper that is way better than it used to be and a cutter and the sinker that is being used correctly and forcing him in. It all makes sense as a full arsenal. But with Hunter Brown, it's a four-seamer that is not 97 anymore. It's now 96. It's still very effective. And the sinker off of that is effective. But it's not quite incredible movement. And the secondaries are just not insanely good. And it's like he's the ultimate kitchen sink guy. It's like the best version of Prime Bassett or something, you know, at higher velocity. So it's always so strange. But I mean, obviously, we just keep starting him and I don't care. So eight innings, one earned run, three hits, zero walks, and nine strikeouts. This was actually 96.7. So that's cool. 8 for 34 whiffs on the four-seamer upstairs, inner half on that sinker. It wasn't really inside off the plate. It was like kind of middle or middle in, but that worked, obviously. This is really the point I'm hammering home. Across everything else but fastballs, Hunter Brown went 3 for 57 whiffs. And I always say, like, you need three things. You need a fastball you can throw for strikes. You need a secondary pitch you can throw for strikes. And you need a big whiff pitch. And like, I don't think the four-seamer really is that. And it's clearly none of the secondaries. So I will always say this. I always get hate mail about something. Whenever like I get someone who's really good and I didn't think they'd be good, I get hate mail for that. And Hunter Brown is like, thanks for convincing me not to draft Hunter Brown. I'm sorry. I just give my opinion. And I'm sorry if you drafted someone thinking he'd be really good and it was really bad, but I hope you got the other guys. And I'm not going to say who those guys were. You know who they are. But Hunter Brown, yeah, I mean, it's one of those times, very much so. Like, Eno was like, hey, top 20. And I was like, I just don't see it. And I was so shocked by it. I'm so thrilled for Hunter Brown. It's a better world with Hunter Brown being good. And yeah, this one is one I've missed so far. Hopefully he's able to sustain it. It still just irks me a little. And if anyone wants to talk to me more about Hunter Brown and really get into the weeds and not talk about like, you know, sequencing necessarily, or talk about, ERA or expected metrics and stuff, actually tell me about the pitches and how they're performing individually. and why it, what I'm missing about this whole package, I would love to hear it. Like, seriously, please have that good conversation with me. Not about like, I'm right, you're wrong. Just like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. This might be the answer. It's kind of what I've been looking for with Andrew Abbott. It's what I've been looking for with people talking about like Casey Mize before, or things about like your friend Canning. Like, whenever there are times that people say, Nick, you're wrong in this guy or that guy, like, I want to know. I want to lean in, because like Brandon Pfaadt, for example, is a perfect one. Right, changeups and curves being added to lefties fix that problem. Now it makes sense, and that's why I'm in on this, right? Even though he just had a bad start. So I would love to hear more about Hunter Brown. Okay. Matt Sawyer against the Athletics. 4 innings, 2 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. I guess he was pitching because Gasparias was in relief in the previous game. So we didn't see him start here, which is incredibly frustrating. We also have just a couple more. We'd only had 6 games yesterday. So really, we got to talk about mostly is Kevin Gausman. And we're going to talk about him and others, of course, after this break. Zach Littell got the gold star because he went against the Jays, which are fine. It's not really like the greatest surprise. It was 3 earned runs and 9 base runners, but it was 7.1 innings in a win and 2 strikeouts. Zach Littell is not someone I expect to do well on any given night. So for the fact that he did well here, congrats, you get a gold star. There are not many guys to give a gold star to, so I give it to you. Trevor Williams against Atlanta, yet never Trevor. Just never Trevor. It's just so easy. You play this wonderful game called Fantasy Baseball, and you can just avoid a player. It's fine. You're going to be fine. Tomoyuki. I always want to say Tomiyuko. Tomoyuki Sugano, I apologize. Got the loss against the Twins, but it was a careful Icarus here. He had the poor quality start entering the 7th inning. So 6.1 innings of 4 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 3 Ks. And the last one came in the 7th because he was in there too long. I think that this was a bit disappointing because Sugano had this really nice 4-seamer command in the previous game. And it wasn't quite as good here. The cutter struggled a little, but I will say he had it through 6. You know, it would have been a 1 whip. I believe, through 6 innings with 3 earned runs. That's pretty cool on a night where you're not at your peak command that you generally need to have success. So I'm in for Sugano against the Brewers. Bryce Wilson against the Reds, 5.1 innings of 7 earned runs, 10 hits, 1 walk, 3 Ks. I mean, yeah, I had a really stupid blurb for this one. So what else am I going to say? Like, it's Bryce Wilson. Okay, don't do that. And Osvaldo Beto went against the Dodgers. I mean, 1.2 innings of 6 earned runs. You know this. That's an obvious don't play. Kevin Gausman, though, against the Rays, 5.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 10 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts. So what's always kind of funny to me is I see these guys with bad sliders. Like, I've seen Shane Baz, I've seen Chris Paddock, I'm seeing Kevin Gausman, who are trying to make the slider work. And when they do, they just, some of them kind of work, and all of a sudden, bam, there's a home run. That happened to Gausman. Actually, it wasn't really the worst one. It was down, but like, yeah, it was just crushed out of there. And the four-seamer allowed home runs. Splitter had 7 whiffs, but over 41. And if you're doing quick maths in your head, okay, so 14 over 80 would be like, I want to say 17%, 18% swing strike rate, right? And that's not great. That is not the 24% swing strike rate that we had in previous years for Kevin Gausman, right? So it's funny because like I'm not seeing anything dramatically different from old Gausman of, hey, here are 4 seamers over the plate and hey, here's the splitter underneath it. But that was always a little iffy and it's a little bit worse now. The splitter is just not as good. So he's just a hipster. Like he's going to have those games where this works and you have it, but I'd rather just not deal with it. You know, I'm very much of a fantasy player where I want to be constantly changing and feeling like I have a guy and I'm cool with it. I'm going to keep rolling with this. This is fine. This is fine. And eventually you just kind of have a staff that you always expect to be good. And you get that normally around like halfway through the season, sometimes by June. And Gausman doesn't look like that kind of guy to me. So I would move on in 12 teamers. I don't think you have a choice in 15 teamers, but you have to hold, especially considering the win chances, of course. As he will go long into this game, and the Jays, honestly, they're not that good of an offense, but you know what I mean. But that's it for today's podcast. A very short one because we only had 6 games from yesterday. And as always, thank you so much for watching on YouTube. I stream these onto YouTube every weekday. I apologize profusely that I have limited how many podcasts I do over the weekend for the Plus Pitch. I found that it is difficult for me to find the time as I'm doing the SP roundups in the morning. It just pushes back the entire day, and I realize that these days that are supposed to be kind of days off for me are not turning into it. So it means that the thing I cut is the Plus Pitch. I apologize. However, the Plus Pitch is more or less the SP roundup, so you get that information there. Make sure you read those articles. They come out around 2 o'clock at the latest, or maybe sometimes it gets as late as 5, and I'm really sorry. But yeah, they should be out by 2 o'clock on weekends moving forward. We'll, of course, at the very latest, be back on Monday. But that is it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.